Chapter 24. A Hopi religious rite. Interesting among Indians, because of their unique houses on the summits of high mesas, reached only by precipitous trails, the Hopi of northern Arizona always have possessed peculiar fascination on account of their thrilling religious rite, known as the Snake Dance, an account of which follows. The sacred dance and the life of the Hopi Indians is more fully set out in the author's larger work, The Indians of the Painted Desert Region. The Painted Desert. The region they live in, named the province of Tusayan by the Spanish conquistadors, 350 years ago, is a region of color. The rocks of which the mesas are built, the sand of the desert, the peculiarly carved buttes which abound on every hand, are all strikingly colored, with such a variety of hues and tints that one does not wonder at the name the Painted Desert, which is applied to the country through which we must travel to reach Hopi land. A saddle trip from Eltover. The traveler who wishes to visit this fascinating and unique region can arrange for full equipment at Eltover. The trip will be a saddle one, and all outfits will have to be transported on pack burros. The Old Hopi Trail. The road followed is practically the line of the Old Hopi Trail. On the way out, the interested traveler may visit Grand View Point and Hotel, Hans's Old Campman Trail, the Red Canyon Trail, Morin's, and all the other salient points at the eastern end of the Grand Canyon, especially should he stand on faraway Navajo Point, or Desert View. This is the last of the promontories before the rim of the canyon turns sharply to the north. Below it, a vast amphitheater is opened out with more precipitous walls than at any other part of the canyon. The sweep of the river, the mouth of Marble Canyon, the superlative richness of coloring at this point, combined with the unequaled views of the Painted Desert, which lies to the right, or east, afford a place of varied delight, scarce found elsewhere on the whole canyon rim. Hopi Cornfields. Crossing the Little Colorado River at the Tanner Crossing, Minkapai is visited, and then a day's ride of 40 miles over the Painted Desert brings one to the cornfields of the Hopi, as properly they should be called. For years, they have been known as the Moki, a term of reproach applied in derision by the Navajos. These cornfields are a wonderful monument to the thrift of the Hopi. White men would have starved to death in the place before they would have dreamed of planting corn in such an inhospitable-looking soil. No springs or streams sufficient to irrigate with, unversed in digging wells and pumping water to the surface, one would have thought an ignorant Indian would have looked elsewhere before planting his corn in such a place. But the Indian is not so ignorant. His life, from the cradle to the grave, is one of close observation. His very existence depends upon its exercise. He soon discovered, therefore, that there was a natural subsoil irrigation in certain parts of this desert, where his corn would grow. And grow it does, most wonderfully. Sometimes water is scarce, then the crop decreases, but generally a good crop may be relied upon. To hoe his cornfield, a Hopi will often run over the desert 40, 50, 60, and even 80 miles in a day. Sometimes, when the field is nearby, the Hopi will ride on his burro. These cunning creatures are almost a necessity of Indian life. The streets would seem lonely without them. It will be noticed occasionally that one of these animals has lost part of his left ear. This is proof that he is possessed of kleptomaniac proclivities. If a burro is found stealing corn, he is sentenced to have part of his ear cut off. Arabi. On one of these burros we ride up the steep trail that brings us to the westernmost village of the Hopi, Arabi. It is perched high on the mesa top, several hundred feet above the valley, and the various trails are steep and rugged. Some of them are sheer climbs, up which no animal other than man can go. There are six other villages, three of them 10 miles, and the other three about 20 miles, to the east of Arabi. They, also, are perched upon high mesas, which thrust themselves, like long fingers, into the sandy desert. on the middle Mesar Shungapavi, Mashagnavayan Shipalovi, while on the eastern Mesar Walpi, Sichamavayan Taino. Sandstone houses. All the houses are built of rude pieces of sandstone, cemented with mud. Steps are made of larger slabs of stone, and often the only means of access is by long ladders, the poles of which tower high above the buildings, and give a singularly picturesque aspect to the village. In the olden days, there were neither doors nor windows in the first story of the houses. They were built so purposely, since they must serve for fortresses as well as homes. Hopi wafer. Bread. One is often likely to find a woman engaged in making pikey. Pikey is a wafer bread, peculiar to the Hopis. It is finer than the finest tortilla of the Mexican, or oatcake of the Scotch. No biscuit maker in America or England can make a cracker one half so thin. The thinnest cracker is thick compared with pikey, and yet the Hopi make it with marvelous dexterity. Cornmeal batter in a crude earthenware bowl is the material. A smooth, flat stone, under which a brisk fire is kept burning, is the instrument, and the woman's quick fingers, spreading a thin layer of the batter over the stone, perform the operation. It looks so easy. A lady of one of my parties tried it once, and failed. My cook, a stalwart Kansas City man, knew he would not fail. And he didn't. He had four of the best blistered fingers I have seen in a long time. But the Hopi woman merely greases the stone, dips her fingers into the batter, carries them lightly and carelessly over the heated surfaces, and, in a moment, strips the already baked sheet from the stone. When several are baked, she folds them over and over until they are about the size of an elongated shredded wheat biscuit. Hopi women as builders. It is a reversal of our conception of things to see the gentler sex engaged in building a house, as is often the case in Hopi land. Yet to the Hopi there is nothing strange in this scene, for the woman, and not the man, is the owner of the house. Hence, the Hopi reasons, why should she not build it? It is hers, so let her make it, and she does. She uses no spirit level, no plumb line, no square, no saw, and yet she makes a creditable house, fairly square and plumb, warm and cozy in winter, and cool and comfortable in summer. The mud of the winter's watercourses is used as mortar, and the pieces of disintegrated sandstone that abound on the mesa tops form the building material. Men who weave and knit. In accordance with Hopi logic, the antithesis of the woman house builders is to be seen daily in the men who are engaged in weaving the women's garments. Men, also, knit the stockings, and follow other, so-called feminine occupations. There is nothing incongruous in these things to them. They are part of the way of the old, handed down to them by their forefathers. Hopi method of weaving. To watch a weaver at work is to acquire a new respect for Indians. As one sees the crude, homemade appliances, and then watches the yarn climb up, thread by thread, battened down by hand, so that the garment will hold water until the article is finished, artistically designed, and perfectly fitted for its required purpose, he comes to the conclusion that the Hopi weaver, at least, is a skilled artificer. Hopi rituals. The Hopi are a remarkably religious people. I question whether there is to be found elsewhere in the world so ritualistic a people as they are. They have ceremonies all of religious character for every month of the year, and some of them require from 8 to 16 days for their observance. Their dances are propitiations of the gods they worship, and whose aid they implore. One of the most noted, and world-renowned of their ceremonies, is the snake dance, and I wish to conclude this chapter with a brief description of this wonderful act, which I have now witnessed 13 separate times. It has been woefully misrepresented by careless writers. The whole ceremony is conducted with a dignity and solemnity that is not surpassed by any Christian observance. Hopi mythology regarding snake dance. It is not a dance, in our sense of the word. It is a prayer for rain, and of thanksgiving for the blessings of harvest, Neither is it an act of snake worship. According to Hopi mythology, the snake and antelope clans, or families, are descended from the union of Teyo and his brother with two sisters, daughters of the snake mother, Teyo being the paternal ancestor of the snake clan, and his brother of the antelope clan. The story of Teyo's visit, using a sealed Apollo pinion log as a boat, and sailing down the Colorado River through Shipapu to the underworld, is one of the most interesting pieces of Aboriginal folklore. It appears elsewhere, and forms the burden of the 16 dramatic songs sung in the secrecy of the underground ceremonial kivas of the snake and antelope clans, in the 9 days of preliminary ceremonial, which culminate in the open-air public dance. See Indians of the Pointed Desert region. Antelope race and corn scramble. There are two other ceremonies connected with the snake dance that may be witnessed by all who like. These are the antelope race and the corn scramble. The former takes place on the morning of the 8th day before sunrise. Though apparently a mere test of athletic ability, it is in reality a religious ceremonial. For centuries, the Hopi lived surrounded by warlike people who preyed upon them. Being few in number, living in a desert land, and beset by murderous marauders, fleetness of foot and great taying powers, while running over the long trails of the sandy deserts, became an essential condition of national preservation. Hence the priests made the cultivation of the bodily powers a matter of religion. Every youth was compelled to exercise to the utmost. The result is a fine athletic development. Each year many great races are run, and two of the chief of these are at the snake dance, there being a race on both the 8th and 9th mornings. At the end of that fierce race across the hot sands, and up the steep mesa, the winner exultantly stands before the chief priests. The lightning bearer then throws the zigzag symbols over him, and rain clouds are pictured at his feet. Then he is hurried onto the antelope kiva, where another priest gives to him the sacred gourd full of water, and a sack full of sacred meal, with certain ceremonial prayer sticks, which, placed and used in his cornfield, ensure to him an extra fine crop at the next harvest. In the meantime, a number of young men and boys have followed the rest of the racers, bearing in their hands corn stalks, melon vines and fruit. As soon as they reach the level mesa top, the women and girls dart upon them, and a most good-natured but exciting scuffle takes place. For 5 to 10 minutes this scramble lasts, and when every corner vine carrier is rid of his gifts, the play is at an end, and all retire to await the great event of the whole ceremony, the open-air dance, when the deadly reptiles are carried in the mouths of the priests. Preparation for snake dance. At noon a secret ceremony takes place in the dark recesses of the kiva, viz. The washing of the elder brothers, as the snakes are called, which I have fully described in The Indians of the Painted Desert Region. When the afternoon shadows lengthen, every available place in the dance plaza is speedily occupied by the villagers and visitors, who wait the march of the antelope priests. The photographers present must keep within a certain line. Arrival of snake priests. After circling in front of the kisai, a cottonwood bower in which the snakes are kept, the antelope priests line up with their faces fronting from the kisai. There they sing and dance a while, waiting for the snake priests. These come from their kiva to the south of the dance plaza, and, as they arrive, all sounds are hushed, and all attention concentrated upon them. They circle before the kaisi, and then line up facing the antelope priests. Appearance of priests. Some people say they are hideous. Others have said, with me, that the sight is sublime. If one looks merely at the half-nude bodies, made repulsive by a coating of reddish-black paint, with dabs of whitewash in several places, at their faces painted with the reddish-black stuff, at the strings of white beads around their necks, and the snake whips in their hands, then indeed it is easy to say that they are hideous. But if one looks at their faces, he will see intense earnestness, deep solemnity, profound dignity, and unflinching belief in the necessity for, and power of the prayer about to be offered. Then too, with what simple, trustful bravery they handle the snakes, when that part of the ceremony comes. They know the danger, no one more so. Indeed, if a priest is afraid, he is not allowed to participate. Not only would his fear prevent his own proper worship, but it would interfere with that of his comrades. Variety of snakes. There were few snakes at Araby, the year I last saw the dance there, but those they had, were active and vicious. There were several rattlers, some red racers, and a few bull snakes. The light was good, and several first-class photographs were made which actually show the snakes in the mouths of the priests. At the snake dance in the other villages, the priest swings the snake out of his mouth, and allows it to fall. Here, I noticed that every snake was gently placed upon the ground by the priest who had been carrying it in his mouth. The antelope men never leave their line during the handling of the snakes. They continue to sing during the whole performance. Purification of priests. While waiting for the priests to return, after taking the snakes into the valley, I learned of several slight changes, owing to changed circumstances. The rain had made numerous small pools at the top of the mesa. The priests, in returning, divested themselves of all their ceremonial paraphernalia, and washed the paint from their bodies, before returning to the kiva and drinking the emetic. Generally, they have gone to their homes at Orebi or at Walpi, have had the women bring water to the west side of the mesa, and there washed themselves. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.